This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Now listen to this.
You are listening to AWOL Radio on CKMS The Sound 100.3 FM in Waterloo. We are also podcasting on the Rabble Podcast Network at rabble.ca, and you can find AWOL on the web at peaceculture.org.
Test their logic. Reap what you sow. Plant a seed. Watch it grow.
Not long ago, here on this planet, all the food you ate was organic. Fed your family with food you gathered. How you live with the land was automatic. Something happened, food was planted. Animals captured, now understand it. Agriculture turned people to bandits. Stealing land, you get upper handed. Wasn't very long, the people in anguish. That's the promise of money, very soon vanished. Instead of providing, still there were famished. Hungry empires, high up, and the land was ravaged. More than damaged, sword everyone, living up and was savage. Primitive heathens that need to be beaten. Burning for much more crops to be seeded. While we're treating, cities are creeping. A tiny elite. Masses being beaten. Control the land, control who's eating. I call it by its name, robbery and steal. Fast forward to the days of steel and steam. The humans in the grips of the industrial machine. The fields are green, and the air that was clean. Replaced by capitalist claims that dream. And the cities kept growing, not even slowing. Probes on the system, populace exploding. Those controlling the land we're holding. The rest enslaved from the cradle to the grave. Robber and barren, sure we're caring. Sharing, leave the earth scorched and barren. Evil and ignorant can't ignore. Cause all our food poison, they're pouring.
Chemicals poison, GMO poison. Food politics. It's simple extortion. Liberate the seeds, we need more than abortion. Take back the world from those that's exploiting. Fast food poison, Monsanto poison. Food politics is simple extortion. Liberate yourself, get a garden, start growing. Rent a seed, meet your needs, we reap what we're sowing.
We reap what we sow, plant a seed, watch it grow. Make monocrop murder, that shit's gotta go. Set fire, 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 bomb Monsanto. Burn all their crops and the patents they own. Liberate our plants from corporate control. And the animals too before their flesh gets sold. Rise up, let's roll. Liberate your soul, stay fresh and organic. Don't be GMO. They mutate DNA, generate clones. Fertilizers, pesticides, cancer explodes. Irradiated food, we evolve been exposed. Chemical additives and high fructose. Glucose, sucrose, sugar high, overdose. Fucking up our bodies with growth hormones. We are what we eat, so we must take control of our food sources and the earth where it's grown.
Chemical poison, GMO poison. Food politics is simple extortion. Liberate the seeds, we need more than abortion. Take back the world from those that's exploiting. Fast food poison, Monsanto poison. Food politics is simple extortion. Liberate yourself, get a garden, start growing. Plant a seed, meet your needs, we reap what we're sowing.
That was Reap What You Sow from Tesla Logic's new album, B, dropping, I don't know, next week, a couple weeks from now. We're going to be playing a couple more Tesla Logic tunes on this edition of AWOL Radio. This is the Smash the State Report. Starting out local, as we have been for the last few shows, on today is no different. It is Friday, May 3rd. It's 4:20 in the afternoon. And gonna start off with a little letter. Little letter I wrote.
Hi, CN Rail. I live near the spur line in Kitchener, and have watched year after year as you spray poisons along the train tracks only meters from my back door. Poisons that kill not only the intended vegetation, but also impact many animals that use the corridor in their lives. Last year, for instance, an entire family of geese died the day after you sprayed the tracks. Additionally, the transition of the land beside the tracks into a municipal trail is bringing increased foot and bike traffic to the trail. Workers, children, poor people, students, politicians, and others use the trail each day to get around town in an environmentally friendly way, that is, safe from vehicle traffic. The yearly spraying of poisons has a negative effect on every user of the trail and a cumulative impact on the safety of the land and water immediately around the spraying. I request that CN does not spray poisons along the spur line where it goes through the residential areas of Kitchener and the Uptown Park or University areas in Waterloo. Instead of spraying poisons, the 3 or 4 kilometers of track could be handpicked once or twice a year, and CN could show actual commitment to community health and environmental safety. Thank you for your time, Dan Keller.
Look, I asked nicely this time.
CN Rail.
Please don't poison the land around people's houses where they live and where they commute. It's not cool. And we're asking nicely. We're doing it proper. Asking nicely first. Next time it's not so nicely. Moving on, AWOL Radio Smash State Report. It is a couple weeks old, but I thought it should be brought to light. Porter, that's Porter Airlines, lost an injunction against their workers that are on strike, and they went straight to a lawsuit, suing the union for $4 million. Rather than negotiate with their striking refueling workers, they are choosing to use any legal means available to avoid dealing with them. Yesterday, or about 2 weeks ago, Porter and the Toronto Port Authority partially lost a court injunction which had sought to prohibit leafleting and noise even in a public park. That very afternoon, they announced with a civil lawsuit of $4 million against the union, whose bargaining unit at the Porter Airport represents only 22 employees. The media co-op spoke with Glenn Wheeler of COPE, that's a Canadian Office and Professional Employees Union, the union which represents the fuel workers. Quote, earlier we had two people charged with trespassing and actually handcuffed and arrested for leafleting in front of the terminal door, which is quite outrageous. That won't be happening anymore because of the court order, as the judge said that you can leaflet in the building, unquote. Wheeler was surprised Porter even tried to get such a restrictive injunction. Quote, we were surprised they took the position that they did because we have a decision of the Supreme Court of Canada saying that an airport, for the purpose of union message, is a public place. Unquote. A draft of the injunction referred to several named parties such as the union, its officials, and also persons presently unidentified. According to COPE, the injunction would have severely limited demonstrations in Little Norway Park, a public park near the ferry docks. Wheeler said that the temporary order, quote, imposed some restrictions, but not the restrictions that the Toronto Port Authority and Porter were seeking. And the union feels very good about the result because it means that our constitutional rights were preserved and we can carry out lawful picketing activities, unquote. After the court decision, Porter went public in the afternoon about a $4 million libel lawsuit against the union, specifically over Twitter use from the union's Porter strike account. It's no coincidence that the airline has targeted social media. Twitter, Facebook, and phone campaigns against Porter have been widespread and effective and have included parodies of Porter advertisements. Even City Councillor Christine Wong Tam has been tweeting on the strike, writing, quote, I'm a Porter client and always pay my own way. Not impressed with them lately. Tax arrears, labor disputes, jets, and now robopoles. Smarten up. Carrie Sharp, who has been helping coordinate support for the workers, spoke to the media co-op about the attempted injunction. Quote, what's scary is that it was even on the table. This is an attempt to shut down dissent. Porter is trying to discourage dissent at a time when they have an application to have jets fly out of the airport and to fill in some of the lake. This injunction process has already had a chilling effect on mobilization. There will be more people afraid now to protest island expansion. The very ambiguity of the injunction is in itself a weapon. They are doing all this in order to shut down protests over the use of public assets for profit. The highest paid refueler at Porter earns $16 an hour. Workers start off at $12 an hour, or $14 with a DZ license. Health and safety, including the procurement of equipment like safety vests, has also been a key union demand. For more background on the strike, check out Not on the Radar. Porter Airline Refuelers Strike hits third month. Also posted on toronto.mediacoop.ca. And that post was by Megan Kinch. And as I said, it was a couple weeks old. What we hear is on May Day in Toronto, the May Day march ended up at Little Norway Park to support the striking refuelers of Porter Airlines. Let's remember, folks, give some solidarity to those striking workers and do not fly Porter. Keeping with ideas to maybe fight back against greed of the capitalist swine, This guy took out a gigantic loan to destroy the financial system. What a great guy. It reminded me a lot of the guy that made the documentary How to Rob a Bank. Check out that documentary. It's a umotions.com production. But this guy here, this article is in vice.com. I'm just going to read the first little intro, tell you to check it out for the rest of the interview. In 2008, anti-capitalist campaigner Enrique Duran borrowed $642,306 from 39 different financial entities with absolutely no hope or intention of paying it back. But as you might expect from an anti-capitalist campaigner, he didn't spend it all on diamond kitchen knives and luxury frisbees. Instead, he plowed it into a number of unspecified anti-capitalist causes and spent the rest on Creasy, a free newspaper that details how he'd done what he did and urged others to do the same. That display of reckless Robin Hoodery turned him into an overnight hero. But the one problem with becoming a hero through questionably legal means is that, for whatever reason, the police feel like they have to go and lock you up for it. Enrique spent 2 months in jail in 2011 and was released pending trial, which was set for earlier this month. His minimum sentence would be 8 years, which might explain why he refused to attend the first trial dates, prompting a warrant to be put out for his arrest. I've been trying to interview Enrique for a couple of years now, but as the 14 financial entities currently trying to send him to jail for embezzlement can attest, he's kind of a tough guy to get a hold of. After countless emails, we eventually set up a Skype date. That too got pushed back by 3 hours, but I guess when you're trying to implement a complete overthrow of the capitalist system, you don't see time in quite the same way as everyone else. When we eventually got to chatting, we spoke about screwing over the banks, his theory of civil disobedience, and his latest project, the creation of a completely autonomous town on the outskirts of Barcelona. You can check out the rest of that interview that was posted up on Vice.com by Paul Geddes on Vice.com. And again, it's called This Guy Took Out a Gigantic Loan to Destroy the Financial System. We should all try that. As much unsecured credit as you can get and just walk away. At least, that is what one person did in the How to Rob a Bank documentary, which, again, check it out. It was based in Canada. Talking about, staying with this whole topic of money, publicintegrity.org has posted this nice little article talking about a huge cache of 2.5 million files which has been released, which has cracked open the secrets of more than 120,000 offshore companies and trusts, exposing hidden dealings of politicians, con men, and the mega rich the world over. The secret records obtained by the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists lay bare the names behind covert companies and private trusts in the British Virgin Islands, the Cook Islands, and other offshore hideaways. Check out the ICIJ.org webpage for more information on this release of documents. They include American doctors and dentists and middle-class Greek villagers, as well as families and associates of longtime despots, Wall Street swindlers, Eastern European and Indonesian billionaires, Russian corporate executives, international arms dealers, and a sham director-fronted company that the European Union has labeled as a cog in Iran's nuclear development program. Also included Canadian politicians and their spouses. The leaked files provide facts and figures, cash transfers, incorporation dates, links between companies and individuals that illustrate how offshore financial secrecy has spread aggressively around the globe, allowing the wealthy and the well-connected to dodge taxes and fueling corruption and economic woes in rich and poor nations alike. The records detail the offshore holdings of people and companies in more than 170 countries and territories. The hoard of documents represents the biggest stockpile of inside information about the offshore system ever obtained by a media organization. The total size of the files, measured in gigabytes, is more than 160 times larger than the leak of U.S. State Department documents by WikiLeaks in 2010. To analyze the documents, ICIJ collaborated with reporters from The Guardian and the BBC in the UK, Le Monde in France, Schustusch in Zeitung, and Norddeutscher Rundfunk in Germany, The Washington Post, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and 31 other media partners around the world. 86 journalists from 46 countries used high-tech data crunching and shoe leather reporting to sift through emails, account ledgers, and other files covering nearly 30 years. Quote, "I've never seen anything like this. The secret world has finally been revealed," unquote, said Arthur Cockfield, a law professor and tax expert at Queen's University in Canada, who reviewed some of the documents during an interview with the CBC. He said the documents remind him of the scene in the movie classic The Wizard of Oz in which they pull back the curtain and you see the wizard operating the secret machine, unquote. Click through to ICIJ.org to continue reading on that. And, quite a few Canadian links, corporate folks and politicians involved in the secret world of tax havens. I feel that requires a song. We're moving to Tesla Logic's War on Us.
$1 billion industry in the palm of their hand. Yeah, it's just one part of the plan to own the fucking planet. Take a look at how it ran. You got these families that own all the banks, that own the government, that create all the tanks. Military industry, it's not complex. War is profit, killing people never stop it. What's next? Well, to control the population of the homeland, make everybody poor, then put drugs into their own hand. Class war, internal army, policeman on your street, man. The beast with the motherfucking heat, man. Their disease plan, keep us down on our knees, man. When we stand and band together, we defeat them, beat them, controlling us. The goal of the war on terror, the vision of boots stomping on our face forever.
War on drugs, it's a war on us. Government cops, I won't ever trust. They bring in the blow, keep it hush, hush. Just us behind bars, I will crush justice. War on terror, it's a war on us. They train the terrorists, got them ready to bust. This is fascist state, take a close look. Create your own enemy, the oldest trick in the book.
Drug war, what for? Control us more. Cops on patrol, rocks getting sold. Cocaine coming through the back door. Building more prisons for the black poor. More cash for a military at war with the whole wide world. Calling World War IV. Locking down every inch of the world. They stole, spreading fear, terrorism. Why they take control? 1984 wasn't far off. 17 years later, the towers got dropped. Got more like the world over eyes. Sent us to die for government lies. Weapon makers need wars to survive. No profit in peace, your words are the wise. Indefinite detention, drones in the sky. Freedom's demise, fear controlling our lives.
War on drugs, it's a war on us. Government cops, I won't ever trust. They bring in the blow, keep it hush, hush. Just us behind bars, I will crush justice. War on terror, it's a war on us. They train the terrorists, got them ready to bust. Let this fascist state take a close look. Create your own enemy, the oldest trick in the book.
They want to control our lives, tell us lies, close our eyes, keep us blind. War on us, no justice, just
check it out, TeslaLogic.com. Smash State Report here on AWOL Radio. One from Rabble.ca. 5 important points for sexual assault awareness. Posted up by Clay Nikki Forick, April 29th. Call it what you wish, sexual assault awareness or sexual assault awareness and action month. Either way, we're in it, and before April comes to a close, I thought I would share 5 action points. Number one, this week, validate a survivor. Maybe you didn't mean to, but the words just slipped out. Maybe at the time you didn't understand what you do now. Either way, it's not too late. This week, validate the experiences of someone in your life who has been sexually assaulted. If it's appropriate, let them know that they are believed and that they are not to blame. If not, honor them silently and hold on to those thoughts for them. Alternatively, make a vow that if or when someone shares with you their experience of sexual assault, you will suspend judgment and listen empathetically without blame or doubt. Validating survivors' experiences as sexual assault, that is, that what happened to them was unquestionably wrong, illegal, and not their fault, increases the chance that they will treat themselves accordingly and seek formal and informal help rather than internalizing anger, guilt, shame, and confusion. Maybe that survivor is you. Take some time this week to validate your experience and ask how you can help yourself heal. Number two, this week, acknowledge victim blaming. Sexual assault can be scary to even think about. Sometimes, when we need to distance ourselves from an unsettling fact, we will do almost anything to convince ourselves that it couldn't happen to us because we're too smart and cautious, or people we love or respect because they're too smart and cautious. This keeps the thought of victims who must not have been as smart and cautious, otherwise that bad thing wouldn't have happened to them, and their experiences at a safe distance. That's victim blaming. No one means to victim blame, well, some people do, but this is such a common way of thinking and talking about sexual assault that victim blaming often happens without our acknowledgement. Progress happens when we shift responsibility for sexual assault onto the perpetrator. Number three, this week, banish a rape script. Think you know what is and isn't sexual assault? You might be relying on a rape script. Rape scripts are the narrow, stereotyped scenarios that inform our ideas of what is supposed to be a typical incidence of sexual assault. Rape scripts can cause us to doubt the legitimacy of an alleged sexual assault based on how far the accuser's story deviates from the norm. Multiple studies have shown that mock juries and actual police officers and judges will more likely perceive a complaint to be lying the further the complainant's account diverges from set ideas and what is a conventionally believable sexual assault story. For starters, this is bad news for men and boys who may or may not come forward about being assaulted, especially by women, because their account will not agree with the stereotyped ideas of a typical victim and a typical perpetrator. Allowing space for multiple stories of sexual assault is important in order for our culture to be more helpful towards sexual assault survivors and better at directing culpability towards perpetrators. Number four, this week, get comfortable with consent and the Canadian Criminal Code. Did you know that Canada's Criminal Code definition of sexual assault is based upon the presence or absence of consent? And it outlines where and when consent can and cannot be given. It states that it is sexual assault where there is a lack of agreement to the sexual activity in question, unquote. It states that a complainant cannot give consent when intoxicated, nor have someone else give consent for them, or consent where a position of trust, power, or authority was abused by the accused. It states that everyone has the right to, by words or conduct, change their mind about what sexual acts they continue. This is important because it gives us a working definition of sexual assault as opposed to relying on the tiresome adages of it takes two to tango and it was gray rape. The code places full responsibility on sexual partners to obtain clear agreement to sexual acts before they happen. Some guidelines on consent. Don't assume carte blanche because someone is in bed with you. We all have sexual boundaries and it's best not to discover your partners by overstepping them. When in doubt, ask. It's your responsibility to make sure you have willing consent from your partner for every act, and not your partner's responsibility to proactively read your mind in case you're planning on doing something you're not sure they will be into. Consent is hot. Think that asking will kill the mood? Wrongo. It's always hot to talk about sex, to say what you want to do, and to make sure you're not committing sexual assault. Number five, this week, seek complexity. Sexual assault is a complex and totally puzzling topic. The more I research, the less I feel I know. What I do know is that there are no easy or simple answers. There is no one true explanation, cause, or cure. But what we can do as individuals and communities to reduce the incidence and harm of sexual assault depends upon our understanding of the issue. Build your understanding this week, and any week you can. Seek complexity. Seek to educate yourself, and don't be afraid to gently educate others. Ask questions and question your assumptions that come from your background and experiences. Sometimes the most important part of learning is the unlearning. Clay Nikki Forok is a recent creative writing graduate from UBC and lives in Montreal. She is currently writing her first book, exploring and critiquing the sociology of sexual assault. When not reading, writing, or getting into vehement debates with strangers, she is dancing, taking pictures, and an avid potluck attendee. To help fund her book, you can go to gofundme.com/Jenny's book, JenniesBook. And following up on that, a note about an Ottawa Citizen article, Rataya Parsons' father responds to Christy Blatchford's column. The father of a Nova Scotia teenager who killed herself earlier this month after she was gang-raped by a group of boys at a party has responded to a Christy Blatchford column about the incident. And he goes on to address some of the things Christy Blatchford said. In her column, Blatchford explores why there might not be a case against Rataya Parsons, rapists who are also accused of passing around a cell phone picture of Rataya, then 15, as she was being sexually assaulted. Blatchford argues that there are two sides to every story and that the evidence was all over the map. Blatchford's a piece of garbage. I've pointed that out many times on the show. There needs to be a lot more Blatchback going on. People need to, like, we don't like her in this town. We know that. She got, she's being blocked from speaking at UW, and you know, they needed to bring in a police force, a pretty huge police contingent, to make sure that her second talk went on. They had 20 officers on. Christy Blatchford is in one of her most recent articles, continuing victim blaming and continuing these ideas that has built this rape culture up. And let's not mince words. That's what we're in here. When victim blaming is the norm, when we tell people not to dress certain ways because that's what makes people get assaulted, no. We need to look at the perpetrators of sexual assaults. Not the people that are victims of them, the survivors of them, you know. Let's shift the blame here. If you can't go out without sexually assaulting someone, stay at home. Maybe if you might sexually assault someone, always have a whistle on you. And if you're about to sexually assault someone, try to start blowing the whistle so they know. Maybe always have a friend with you that can you know, punch you in the face if you're about to commit a sexual assault, or to stop you before you can, is what I'm saying. We got to get away from this victim blaming. Christy Blatchford, the piece of crap hack writer for the National Post, continuing rape culture by her stupid and insensitive and victim blaming comments. Blatchback, screw you, Blatchford. And one more piece before going to another break. We reported a few weeks ago about the incident at the University of Waterloo where anti-abortion and anti-women's rights MP, Conservative MP Stephen Woodworth was shouted down during one of his anti-abortion discussions, so-called discussions. Well, we have an update on that story. One of the students, one of the people involved in that protest, has been banned from the UW campus. On the evening of March 13th, a group of reproductive justice activists participated in a counter-rally against Stephen Woodworth's lecture on Motion 312 at the University of Waterloo. The disruption made national news and has led to the banishment of Ethan Jackson from all properties owned or operated by the University of Waterloo and the properties or of affiliated colleges, unquote. This letter, which was hand-delivered to Jackson on April 22nd, was issued by the director of the University of Waterloo Police, Daniel Anderson. There has been a petition posted online that is calling for the University of Waterloo to allow Ethan Jackson onto the university property. Quote, I am entering my fourth year at WLU in a Bachelor of Arts degree. I am a paying community member of WPIRG and plan on attending fall 2013 courses within the Faculty of Arts at the University of Waterloo as a partnership between my university and UW. This ban will not let me take courses at UW. I have not been given any clarification or reasoning as to why this ban is in place, wrote Jackson. It seems that as of now, Ethan Jackson is the only person being targeted by university police. You can sign the petition on gopetition.com /petitions/allowEthanJackson on the campus of University of Waterloo. And I know how that's like. One time, Julian Nickham actually and myself got delivered letters from University of Waterloo police telling us we were banned from the campus. However, that didn't work out so well, considering I was a student at the time. That is when they set up a protest pen when they brought in 20 officers, 20 plus officers, to let Christy Blatchford speak, because they really, really promote, you know, free speech there. Protest pens and allowing rape culture, racist rape culturists to continue on. Yeah, that's real great. Okay. UW. Anyway, support Ethan Jackson. Smash the State Report here on AOL Radio. Going to another song. Let's go to The Light, Tested Logic, off their new album, B. I hope this one's clean.
From my heart, ain't much but it's everything I got. In this cold world, it keeps my core hot and lights my way when I'm alone in the dark. On this road that I walk, fires need to be lit, so my light is a spark that lets other flames live. Fuel the fires of love and hope, never hatred. Let my light shine bright like joyful faces. Pass the torch to the younger generations. Spread infernos through walls and cages. Fire cleanses, heals, and recreates us. When our lights unite, the fire blazes. Explosions of passion, concrete cracking, chain reaction, the light comes back in. The life that was lacking springs up into action like seas, like speed through the tunnel and traveling.
Chasing the cheese, burn the maze. Get off our knees, break the chains. To all are free and none are enslaved. So we carry the flame deep into the dark. Inside your heart is the home of the spark. Hit your mark, find your part. The moment is now, the beginning to start. It's here, years beyond an idea. It's clearing the mind, all fear disappears. Meditate, elevate, cultivate the inner state. Obliterate the hate, break free, dedicate. Our fate is so great, no time to wait. Shine your light bright, third eye awakes. That's all that it takes. Concentrate, forever the light penetrates. It's the light.
Oh, no.
Can't wait till they come back to town. They just toured North America. Coming back, back into the region soon, we hope. Maybe we can hook something up with, you know, some of the other shows here on Sound FM, CKMS. Maybe hook up a street hop, as you know. That is some local hip hop there. I think it's Toronto. It's localish, whatever. Moving forward, Smash State Report here on AOL Radio. We got more for you, and just wanted to mention a few awesome programs up on Radio for All, and it's from the Everybody Conference, and it's one of the panels that happened. It's program 67345, the Everybody Conference Prisoners Health Panel, and it's a panel with Krista Williams, who is the Advocacy and Outreach Coordinator for the Native Youth Sexual Health Network, Stephanie Macy, who has worked in harm reduction for over 10 years and has worked with PASIN offering support to incarcerated people and ex-incarcerated people around the issues of healthcare, especially HIV and hepatitis C, as well as other forms of harm reduction. Tina Reynolds is the co-founder and chair of Women on the Rise, Telling Her Story, or WORTH. WORTH is an association of formerly and currently incarcerated women who have been empowered by their own experiences while involved in the criminal justice system and beyond. Check out that entire piece. Again, program 67345 up on radioforall.net. Also linked from the everybodyconference.wordpress.com. And it was recorded by CFRU. Moving into a couple more pieces. This one from the Dominion. And it's a piece posted up by Tim Groves, Spies That Share. Documents show CSIS collaboration with private sector. The Canadian Security Intelligence Service is disclosing intelligence to private companies despite a law that does not permit this sharing. There is a new imperative for the service to work closely with industry partners, according to the 2010 review of CSIS's private sector relationships created by the Security Intelligence Review Committee, SIRC, the body that oversees the spy agency's compliance with the law. The review, released through Freedom of Information legislation, explains that the CSIS Act expressly does not permit the sharing of intelligence with the private sector. However, it condones the sharing that is taking place, emphasizing that the Act was developed in a different era, with a different threat environment, and that the Act is appropriately restrictive and has strict parameters for intelligence sharing, which are in place. The review details the liaison program that exists between CSIS and a variety of groups, including private industry partners that maintain critical infrastructure, private security firms, and security firms responsible for shopping malls. According to the review, the CSIS Act, quote, limits the agency's duties and functions to reporting and advising the Government of Canada. Continuing, noting the Act does not contemplate disclosure to private sector groups. When it comes to Canada's spy agency handing information to the private sector, the CSIS Act is ambiguous, according to Ron Atkey, who chaired the CERC committee in the 1980s. Quote, one would like to think that CSIS would legally operate with the private sector, Atkey told the Dominion. However, he acknowledges that there are serious questions related to this. Atkey calls the lack of legal clarity a festering sore. He is encouraged by the fact that a review of the issues was carried out, but doesn't think that changes in legislation will be made until an accident takes place. What kind of accident is he thinking of? Quote, information that is vital to Canadian security being shared inadvertently with an entity that turns out to be hostile to Canada's interest. Then all hell breaks loose when that becomes public and you have to focus on it. Unquote. These issues are best addressed when they become public, says Atkey. Quote, don't go looking for major issues when they are not major at this point, he said. In other words, let sleeping dogs lie. Unquote. Abby Deshman, a lawyer with the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, disagrees. Quote, so much of this activity is undertaken in secret. Many of the problems that happen may never become public, so CERC, I think, has an additional responsibility to ask proactive questions, to be seeking out potential problems before they happen. Unquote. Continuing, Deshman says, the legislative prohibition on sharing much of this information is being skirted around. If the oversight agency is approving actions that contravene the law, I think that is a major problem. Unquote. Although the heavily redacted review is sparse on details of CSIS's collaboration with the private sector, the Dominion has revealed a series of classified intelligence briefings for major energy companies that were held at CSIS headquarters. Although organized by the Department of Natural Resources, CSIS and the RCMP collaborated on the day-long events. New documents show a briefing held in November 2011 covered challenges to energy projects from environmental groups. And a May 2012 briefing included a panel discussion on the Northern Gateway Pipeline and projects related to the tar sands. Previous briefings have dealt with subjects such as Indigenous unrest and the G20 summit. Deshman believes working through other agencies is one of the legal means available to CSIS for sharing intelligence, but noted it is unclear what is being shared. Quote, "The real concern here is that we don't know what is being said, why it is being said, and for what uses," says Deshman. "I think you really have to ask some serious questions about whose interests are being served and for what purpose," unquote. Tim Groves is an investigative researcher and journalist based in Toronto. He can be researched at TimmyMitt on Twitter. For more information on his work, check out timgrovesreports.wordpress.com. And following up on this kind of security state type stuff, why is Omar Khadr still in jail? In 2002, Omar Khadr was captured by the Americans in Afghanistan. He was 15 years old. 11 years later, he's still in jail, and his sentence runs for 7 more years. Last year, the conservative government was finally forced to repatriate Omar Khadr to Canada, where he is now incarcerated in Millhaven Maximum Security Penitentiary without access to basic education and rehabilitation programs. Now a new group in Vancouver, the Free Omar Khadr Committee, says it's time to release Khadr, provide for his rehabilitation and education, and compensate him for violation of his rights. The new committee invited Dennis Enni, Khadr's lawyer, to speak in Vancouver on April 16th. The meeting was endorsed by the BC Civil Liberties Association, CUPW Pacific Region, Lawyers Against the War, Lawyers Rights Watch Canada, No One Is Legal Vancouver, StopWar.ca, and the Seriously Free Speech Committee. According to Edney, the entire Omar Khadr saga is a stain on the rule of law and Canadian democracy. When captured, he had committed no crime and yet was held for 5 years before any charges were laid. When he was finally charged in 2007 as an unlawful enemy combatant with crimes invented by the U.S. Military Commission Act of 2006, these are not crimes under international or Canadian law and were not even crimes in 2002 under U.S. law. In any event, the U.S. accusations have never been proven in a properly constituted court. In 2011, in exchange for Omar Khadr confessing to these charges, a U.S. military tribunal sentenced him to 8 more years on top of the time served, with the condition that he could apply to return to Canada. Since Khadr's confession was extracted after over 9 years of torture and mistreatment, it cannot be a valid determinant of guilt, says Edney. Khadr's case was a violation of the United Nations Declarations of the Child, which places special importance on protecting children, even those in custody, according to Edney. Gail Davidson of Lawyers' Rights Watch, a local spokesperson for the new committee, said, "Canadian authorities wrongly persist in claiming that the illegal Guantanamo Bay sentencing gives them the legal right to continue to imprison Omar. The Supreme Court of Canada and the U.S. Supreme Court have confirmed that his rights have been violated by the U.S. and Canada. The U.N. Committee Against Torture called on Canada to honor our legal obligation to provide him with a compensation for the violations confirmed by the Supreme Court of Canada. Canada has a legal duty to release Omar and ensure that the violations of his rights are investigated and remedied." Dennis Enni is the recipient of the 2009 Human Rights Medal awarded by the Lieutenant Governor of British Columbia for work that, quote, "has helped to promote and further human rights," unquote, and except for a brief period has represented Khadr since 2004 on a pro bono basis. Why is Omar Khadr still in jail? Earlier this week, or last week, or right after the Boston Marathon bombings, Liberal leader Justin Trudeau had said, you know, we got to look deeper, look at the root causes of the problems, like the root causes of terrorism. What's the causes there? And he got mocked. He got mocked by other politicians, you know, including like Harper. Harper was like, "This is no time for sociology," you know, just kind of ignorant comments like that. Well, you know, let's look at the root causes of terrorism. A couple weeks ago, U.S. officials confirm that over 10 children were killed in a U.S. drone attack on a wedding. You know, what's the root causes of terrorism? Is it a foreign military bombing a wedding and killing 10 children? That sounds like terrorism. With a remote control plane? That sounds like terrorism to me. You know, what is the root causes of terrorism? I think it's imperialism. I think it's colonization. I think it's oppression. I think other people will agree with me on that. Anyways, God, it's not like it's a big question. What are the root causes? They're easy. They're the ones that we create through war. They're the ones that we create through this hierarchical system set up with domination and oppression. You know, those are the root causes of terrorism. We don't know. We may want some sociology to explain that, but we don't need it. Just ask any villager in Afghanistan. Ask them what terrorism is, and they'll tell you exactly what it is. It's imperial nations bombing the hell out of people. For resources like oil. And we're gonna jump over. I mean, the war in Afghanistan, you know, the big argument is that a resource war? Was that a resource war? There's huge amounts of discussion and evidence that says yes, the pipeline agreements that were made with the help of Canadian political officials and former political folks like Jean Chrétien to set up a pipeline across Afghanistan after the war finished, you know, that's a resource war. It's an imperial resource war. Well, a lot of action has been taking place in other parts of the country or other parts of the world. People are waking up to this worldwide fight against the continuing extraction of resources with no care for the environment, with no care for the future, from a few companies that are gonna megaly profit off this. Tarsandsblockade.org is an awesome resource with lots and lots and lots of actions taking place all across the states around a few different pipelines, mostly around the Keystone XL pipeline. And over the past week, we had two Texans locked down to protect cross timbers from tar sands. Earlier on the 29th, two Texas residents locked themselves to machinery being used to construct TransCanada's dangerous and controversial Keystone XL tar sands pipeline in Spalding, Oklahoma, through Muscogee Creek Nation land by treaty. Benjamin Butler and Eamon Treadway Danzig took action today to prevent the Cross Timbers bioregion from being poisoned by this inherently dangerous tar sands pipeline, just as the surrounding wetlands and residential areas have been poisoned as a result of Exxon's Pegasus pipeline rupture near Mayflower, Arkansas. Recent tar sand spills in Minnesota and Arkansas, as well as an explosion at a tar sands refinery in Detroit, have highlighted the urgency in stopping tar sands extraction and transportation. Butler and Danzig are acting as part of the Great Plains Tar Sands Resistance, a growing coalition of groups and individuals dedicated to stopping the expansion of tar sands infrastructure throughout the Great Plains. Their actions follow the escalating number of work-stopping actions that have occurred in Oklahoma this past month. Both anti-extraction activists cite concern of the effects of a spill will have in the Cross Timbers bioregion that they call home. Their action comes in the wake of the rupture of ExxonMobil's Pegasus pipeline, which spilled tar sands bitumen in neighboring Mayflower, Arkansas. In addition to the high rates of sickness that the surrounding community displayed, the spill in Arkansas has polluted Lake Conway and has had devastating effects on local wildlife. The permanent effect on people's livelihoods and the health of the affected ecosystems remain to be seen. Quote, this pipeline is essential for continued tar sands exploitation, which poses an imminent threat to the health of indigenous communities near the point of extraction, fence line communities around the toxic refineries, and ultimately the health of every living being along the route, said Benjamin Butler, who was born at Tinker Air Force Base in Oklahoma. He continued, I believe a more beautiful world, one where the profits of a corporation don't outweigh the health of the people and the planet. Other actions that took place, activists with the Great Plains Tar Sands Resistance shut down a site by a barrel filled with concrete and a big hole and an arm in that barrel in the middle of a road. People, It's easy to really block traffic and to block construction from happening. So we had that action happening a few days before that shutdown happened. A few days before that, activist locked himself to Keystone XL heavy machinery, launching a Red River showdown over KXL South. And it looks like a few people were in on that action. The awesome mobilization and resistance to the tar sands pipelines in the States is an inspiration and is a continuing inspiration to those battling pipelines in Canada, the tar sands pipelines that are out west, the tar sands pipelines that are going to be coming east. We got to fight them at all levels. We got to choke out the tar sands by stopping the flows, pinch the veins, and they won't be able to continue the extraction, and we can actually get to work on a more sustainable future. Again, check out tarsandsblockade.org for more information on tar sands resistance in the States. More info from the States that maybe we can start mirroring up here in Canada. A first county in U.S. bans fracking and all hydrocarbon extraction. Mora County, New Mexico, earlier today, this happened on May 2nd, the County Commission of Mora County, located in northeastern New Mexico, became the first county in the United States to pass an ordinance banning all oil and gas extraction. Drafted with assistance from the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, the Mora County Community Water Rights and Local Self-Government Ordinance establishes a local bill of rights, including a right to clean air and water, a right to a healthy environment, and the rights of nature, while prohibiting activities which would interfere with those rights, including oil drilling and hydraulic fracturing or fracking for shale gas. Communities across the country are facing drilling and fracking. Fracking brings significant environmental impacts, including the production of millions of gallons of toxic wastewater, which can affect drinking water and waterways. Studies have also found that fracking is a major global warming contributor and have linked the underground disposal of frack wastewater to earthquakes. CELDF Executive Director Thomas Lindsay Esquire explained, quote, "Existing state and federal oil and gas laws force fracking and other extraction activities into communities, overriding concerns of residents. Today's vote in Mora County is a clear rejection of this structure of law, which elevates corporate rights over community rights, which protects industry over people and the natural environment," unquote. He stated that, quote, "This vote is a clear expression of the rights guaranteed in the New Mexico Constitution, which declares that all governing authority is derived from the people. With this vote, Mora is joining a growing people's movement for community and nature's rights," unquote. CELDF community organizer and Mora County resident Kathleen Dudley added, quote, "The vote of Mora Commission Chair John Olivius and Vice Chair Alfonso Grigio to ban drilling and fracking is not only commendable, it is a statement of leadership that sets the bar for communities across the state of New Mexico," unquote. She explained that the ordinance calls for an amendment to the New Mexico Constitution that, quote, "elevates community rights above corporate property rights," unquote. Mora County joins Las Vegas, which in 2012 passed an ordinance with assistance from CELDF, which prohibits fracking and establishes rights for the community and the natural environment. CELDF assisted the city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to draft the first local Bill of Rights, which prohibits fracking in 2010. Communities in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Maryland, New York, and New Mexico have enacted similar ordinances. Mora County joins over 150 communities across the country which have asserted their rights to local self-governments through the adoption of local laws that seek to control corporate activities within their municipality. For more on the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, check out CELDF.org. Our next story we have is a win, a huge win on bees. Europe has just banned bee-killing pesticides. Mega corporations like Bayer threw everything they had at this, but people power, science, and good governance came out on top. Vanessa Amaral Rogers from the specialist conservation organization Bug Life says, "It was a close vote, but thanks to a massive mobilization by Avaz members, beekeepers, and others, we won. I have no doubt that the floods of phone calls and emails to ministers, the actions in London, Brussels, and Cologne, and the giant petition with 2.6 million signers made this result possible. Thank you, Avaz, and everyone who works so hard to save the bees." Bees pollinate 2/3 of all our food, so when scientists noticed that silently they were dying at a terrifying rate, Aval swung into action, and we kept on swinging until we won. Unquote. This week's victory is the result of 2 years of flooding ministers with messages, organizing media-grabbing protests with beekeepers, funding opinion polls, and much, much more. It's time to celebrate this breathing space for one of the Earth's most precious and important creatures. But the EU ban is only in place for 2 years, pending further review. And around the world, bees continue to die from pesticides, which weaken and confuse them, as well as from loss of habitat as we plow up and build over the countryside. In Europe and across the world, there's a lot of work to do to ensure sound science, guiding our farming and environmental policies, and we're just the community for the job. Let's keep this going as far as we can. We need to bring this kind of protection for bees to Canada, to North America. And with that, we're going to go to a tune, Test Their Logic. And this is Be Healthy from Test Their Logic.
Yeah.
Modified plants and seeds, putting poison pollen in the air we breathe, spraying pesticides, killing birds and bees, all hives in a state of emergency. Profit makers killing off the pollinators with toxins sprayed over a lot of acres, killing the bugs, and then they wonder why the crops are failures. All it takes is one leg to break to throw it all away, cause if there's no bees to pollinate the trees, there won't be any fruits or food to eat. Life on earth will completely cease. In just a few years, we'll all be deceased. Please believe, all of this is facts. Talk to beekeepers about colony collapse. When I see bees buzzing in the flowers, I relax and protect the beehives everywhere I'm at.
None of us can eat if the bees aren't healthy, but some people would rather be rich and wealthy than care about a shared wealth of birthplace. Plus the bees and the life that they pollinate. None of us can eat if the bees aren't healthy, but some people would rather be rich and wealthy than care about a shared wealth of birthplace. Plus the bees and the life that they pollinate.
I can't believe we're killing the bees for cell phones and Monsanto seeds. The death machine is run on human greed. Where the GMOs go, the earth will bleed. When the bees stop pollinating the crops, they die and they drop. We need them, we forgot. Pesticide, ecocide, polluting the pollen. Colony collapse now. Our comrades are falling, we forgot what true wealth was. We should have known that it's coming from that sweet buzz. Without the hive, how we gonna stay alive? Our destinies are tied, how will we survive? We need them, but they don't need us. It feels the planet about to control, all delete us. How we treat others, how it's gonna treat us. Give respect for all life, always, because
none of us can eat if the bees aren't healthy, but some people would rather be rich and wealthy than care about a shared wealth of birthplace. Bless the bees and the life that they pollinate. None of us can eat if the bees aren't healthy, but some people would rather be rich and wealthy than care about a shared wealth of birthplace. Bless the bees and the life that they pollinate.
That was Be Healthy from Test Their Logic off their new album, Be. We got a couple more notes here on AWOL Radio. That's a big win on bees. Good work of Oz and activists in Europe. One quick one. Somehow we missed that, this one, when they first launched, but the Nonviolent School of Direct Action has been launched in Kitchener. It's a community project based in Kitchener, Ontario. They offer educational events and resources about ongoing struggles and injustices while seeking to foster engagement and action. The Nonviolent School of Direct Action offers free workshops on a wide range of skills and theoretical approaches for direct action. We explore histories of resistance and host people from the front lines to share their skills and experience. Our workshops are organized in a way that hopes to benefit both new and experienced activists. We want to work together to build an inclusive and autonomous movement. This is our revolution. We hope to grow into a fuller realization of this commitment through interactions with the community. The Nonviolent School of Direct Action wants to contribute to the creation of new spaces that encourage everybody to find their rhythm in a movement against the many violent faces of the empire.
We gleefully affirm a diversity of tactics and trust that others will do the same. We call for bold, creative, defiant action that breaks the molds of our society and erodes the empire in real and visible ways. This project began in 2010 through conversation and outreach with various places of worship, existing NVDA organizations, and community groups. Throughout this process, we have strived to keep our focus on creating a meaningful and authentic school. We are now pleased to offer that to the community. We're a non-funded grassroots group that relies on skill and resource sharing from our community to sustain our activities. What we offer: training in nonviolent direct action. Experienced facilitators share skills for a wide range of direct action techniques. Education on current struggles. Educational events will highlight ongoing struggles and injustices, both local and global, to strengthen our individual and collective contributions to the movement. Connection to existing initiatives. There are so many groups and individuals offering great resources and infrastructure to our movement, we will facilitate chances to connect with them. Networking and skill sharing. Ask about having an info booth at NSVDA events about a project that you are working on. Offer to share a skill for NVDA at one of our events. Invite us to endorse and promote your event or initiative. Check out nvsda.wordpress.com. And again, that's the Nonviolent School of Direct Action located in Kitchener, Ontario. Just wanted to make a few notes. We started off with a story about
CN Rail.
Talking about
CN Rail
spraying pesticides in our communities. I mean, they're spraying pesticides everywhere.
CN Rail
needs to stop spraying pesticides everywhere. But perhaps they could start by stop spraying pesticides in residential areas, at the very least. The Spurline Trail in Kitchener-Waterloo is a mixed-use trail which runs right beside a track, a train track. Well,
CN Rail
once a year sprays this track and kills everything that's on it, including the wildlife that use the corridor, and put off a bunch of people out of their way who now can't use a community trail for who knows the actual amount of time, as the pesticide signs don't say when it's safe to use that area again. Well, we have a call for action, and it's from Twitter, and it's contact
CN Rail
and ask them not to spray any pesticides in residential areas. And let them know that spraying pesticides along their tracks is silly. Spraying pesticides in residential areas, in the uptown areas, in park areas is equally as silly. And dangerous to the health and safety of the community and the environment. The cities of Waterloo and Kitchener, the region of Waterloo, need to come together and tell CP that they're not allowed to spray in these areas, especially in the residential zones of the cities and in the used areas where there's people, where there's animals, where it's a corridor of travel. We need to stop poisoning our land, stop poisoning our water supply to get rid of some pests, to get rid of so-called weeds, some vegetation. It's only 3 or 4 kilometers, the Spurline Trail, and where the tracks are along that. Why not just handpick those few kilometers? People need jobs. Spraying is poisonous. You got to pay people to do that, and you got to pay for the poison. Why not just pay people to pick those couple kilometers of tracks a couple times a year? Get rid of the weeds that way. Smash the State Report here on AWOL Radio, and we're calling that the podcast. We're going to be playing a couple of the pieces from the Prisoners Health Panel from the Everybody Conference, which took place in Guelph a few weeks ago. We do thank everybody for joining us. And going to a song, Tessalogic, off their new album, this is God Bless the Grass.